Bet on Bears fans, another edition of the Chicago Bears podcast coming your way. Pat the Designer, Shay Norley back in the building. Shay, the Chicago Bears are offseason champions yet again, it feels like.
Hang the banner.
I think is this 3 or 4 years in a row? There's been some debate. Did the Justin Fields, getting Justin Fields count as a championship?
No, I think it's the last three seasons.
Last three in a row.
Brian Poles has won the offseason pretty much. Well, I mean, he did tank the first year.
He tanked the first
year. We knew what was going on. But every year since, he has won the offseason.
Great. We've got banners hanging that mean absolutely nothing. And because of that, we're going to go through our award ceremony.
Before we do that, I have a question. Can I pose a question to the people in the comments?
Let's do it.
Who hate me.
Yeah.
But this is serious.
There are more thumbs ups than there are comments.
No, I get it. And I don't care. I want to ask some of these people who hate me because I don't genuflect at the altar of the Chicago Bears as if they have accomplished anything. Genuinely, when it's like, Shay hates everything Ryan Poles does. Well, that's not true. You're not listening. But really, I'm asking, what has he done that has you so ready to run to his defense? That is my challenge. You want to hate me? I'm all good with it. Hate me. I don't care. But like, tell me what he's done, what achievement he has that you run to his defense the moment there's any criticism. I'd love to hear it. That's my question of the day.
Yeah.
If you're going to post, I'm tired of Shay, I won't listen when he's on, cool, good, please listen. But like, tell me
what... It does crack me up because they took the time to comment, so it counts as a listen.
Tell me what achievement he has that you are so willing to defend. I want to know. That's all.
I'm here for it. Let us know in the comments below. I think this offseason is maybe a little bit more of a bigger championship with a lot of the acquisitions. Of course, we got to wait to see how it all plays out. But we got to go through some of the offseason awards. And yes, we are going to do some offseason awards. And I have gone full on cheesy. Oh, it gets bad. But we do have to let you know the Chicago Bears podcast brought to you by the Advantage Dealer Group. Find your next Chevy, Toyota, or Acura and drive off in under 60 minutes or they'll make your first car payment. Also brought to you by the Hard Rock Casino in Northern Indiana, located 30 minutes from Soldier Field, I-80 94 exit 6. And brought to you by Mitch Lyons Wealth. Mitch Lyons Wealth, a former NFL player, and he is an expert in protecting your nest egg and optimizing your income. Go to MitchLyonsWealth.com. MitchLyonsWealth.com, your best game plan to protect, grow, and win retirement. All right, Shay, we're going to do some off-season awards here. Going all the way from things like your biggest winners to who's under the most pressure coming into this season.
Yeah.
And when our producer, Eric Ostrowski, shout out to him. I don't know why I had a stroke right there.
Content savant.
Yeah, content savant. Sent us this idea. I said, we got to go all in. We got to name each of these awards. And every one of these awards, very Bears theme name.
Should we get some paper plates?
We might have to. This might get tingly. Biggest winner. Let's start it off here. The Monster of the Midway Medal. The biggest winner of the offseason with all of the offseason acquisitions is who?
Well, I took a different angle. So for the biggest winner for me, the Monster of the Midway Award, it's Caleb Williams and Ben Johnson as the co-biggest winners because they got all the flashy toys. They have everything they need to run a really creative and really prolific offense if all of these pieces work. You rebuilt your offensive line with a very serious guard in Joe Tooney. Drew Dowman in the middle. You got right guard Jonah Jackson if he can stay healthy. Darnell Wright looked good in flashes. And then you have kind of what I think is a position battle with Braxton Jones and Ozzie Trapillo at left tackle. In addition to that, you get DJ Moore back. You get Roma Dunze back. But you added Colston Loveland. You added Luther Burden. I do think what Poles said last week about the running game improving because the offensive line has improved should hold true as long as those acquisitions are what we think they are. And the people who will reap the benefit the most are the quarterback and the offensive coordinator / head coach.
Yeah.
To me, those two are the biggest winners of everything that went down this offseason. I thought about saying Ryan Poles because I think he's gained a little bit of trust back from a fan base that I think was starting to lack. But this all has to work before I can call him a winner.
Yeah.
His winner, his whether or not Ryan Poles is a winner of the offseason will be baked into what the record is at the end of the regular season.
Yeah. What takes it for him to be a winner? What's the record got to be, your minimum? Just are you a 9-8, you improved a lot kind of person, or do you need to see 12 of these things?
I can't put an. Do you know how hard it is to win 12 games in the NFL?
Yeah. And somehow everyone in the NFC North managed to do it except us.
It's so hard to do, though. Yeah. And the season can play out in so many different ways. He's got to make the playoffs. To me, there was a vote of confidence. You had three non-playoff seasons where you were, frankly, atrocious. You know, the middle season being the best season at 7-9, but sandwiched with a tank year and then a year where the wheels came off because you wed yourself to a terrible head coach.
Yeah.
I thought it was, like, in my world, I would have moved on. And it's a vote of confidence from the organization to bring him back. But that vote of confidence has to be paid off with a playoff berth.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, what are we doing here? I don't know a sport outside of like certain teams with lackadaisical ownership where you marry yourself to a front office. In the NFL, four non-playoff years in your first four seasons as a GM, you're gone.
Yeah. In my world. Welcome to Chicago, where Arturis Karnishov is going nowhere.
And it's not just here.
I mean,
it happens in New York with the Maras and the way that Shane and Dable are still employed. What have they done? It happens in Detroit and hockey. Steve Yzerman's going on year seven without a playoff berth. He's still employed.
Yeah.
It's crazy how some of these owners marry themselves to people. And in my world, I would move on more quickly because I think when you get it right, it happens pretty fast, typically. And if it's not a playoff year this year, I think the jury will be pretty much in on Ryan Poles, that this just isn't going well.
And I think what's interesting is, right, we haven't heard about that Ryan Poles extension just yet. Whether it was 4 years or 5 years on Ryan Poles, you would think with a new head coach coming in, there would be an extension that kind of marries those two together. We haven't heard that yet. Maybe it's something that they're not worried about because it is 5 years and you got another year to worry about it, but we'll see. I went similar direction to you, but I went with a name that me and you have both, have said has not performed well at his time in the NFL behind a Super Bowl line and behind, of course, this Bears terrible line. DeAndre Swift, I've got on the list. I did go co with Caleb Williams, but I think DeAndre Swift is somebody who benefits greatly from this because there's never going to be a better time for you to go out there and say, hey, no, I should be making $8 million. And by the way, I don't want to leave this team because they're about to get really good offensively, which is the hope. I want to be back here. I'm going to perform well above what $8 million is worth. I've got literally everybody on the offensive line now who is grades much better in the run game than they do in the pass block game. It is set up for DeAndre Swift to win, especially in outside zone. You add in Luther Burden, who's a willing blocker. You've got DJ Moore, who's a good blocker. You've got Roma Dunze, who's shown flashes, but maybe needs to be a little more consistent with it. Like, you have all the pieces for your life to be easier, and Ben Johnson's calling the plays. DeAndre Swift, I think, is a big winner this offseason, and he has the best chance to prove it in a draft where you didn't take a running back till the seventh round, and now in an offseason where your best options are J.K. Dobbins and Nick Chubb.
I struggle with it a little bit because clearly the Bears, like if you take Weider's reporting, clearly the Bears were motivated to move up and get a running back, and I don't think that they're married to DeAndre Swift by any stretch. But because the draft fell the way it did and you end up with Menungai in the seventh round, the opportunity is there.
Yes.
Now, if they go out and sign Dobbins, the writing's kind of going to be on the wall. And beyond just, well, the Lions got rid of Swift when Ben Johnson was there. Look at the year that Swift was there.
Yeah.
They didn't use Swift. He was, like, invisible in their backfield and in their game plans. So I'm withholding judgment on it. He'll have the opportunity, certainly, with the way the roster looks right now. But I just remember in 2022, Detroit didn't have a running back worth anything and would not give the ball to DeAndre Swift. So I got to wait and see on it.
Yeah, I do feel like the Bears want to move on, but I think the opportunity is why I count him as a winner. There's no better opportunity in the NFL for you right now.
Yep.
Like you've got the offensive line. In theory, you've got the quarterback in place that's going to make it easier for you in some play-action opportunities. They're going to throw the football to you more than not if you win this job out. Like, I think this is going to be a good opportunity for him. Let's look at the biggest loser, as I like to call it, the double doinker for the offseason. Shea, who is your biggest loser this offseason?
Cole Kmet. If you built an offseason in a lab to make Cole Kmet feel like he was on the outs with this team, it would look exactly like the one the Bears just had. And I think early on, you get Ben Johnson, and you're like, okay, this could work out really well. You'll get Kmet back involved. Then you go into the draft, and you take a tight end with the 10th pick, and you take a slot receiver with your first pick in the second round. A
lot of weapons.
And it just, where are the targets going to be for Cole Kmet? And I have to tell you, like, I know the 12 personnel thing. I think some people were putting most in the league. That's not true. The Lions use 12 personnel, the third most in the league, on about 38% of their snaps.
Still a lot.
But that's a lot.
Still a lot. But yeah, but I get
it's you. Not that that's 80% correct. Number yeah, that yeah. Some people were floating. It was 38% of their snaps and 12 personnel. And if Colston Loveland is tight end one, this is, again, my world. I can't have tight end two, who's a package player, making Cole Kmet money. I don't think they're going to move on from Cole Kmet this offseason, though I wouldn't totally rule it out.
Post June 1, you could save $10 million.
With a trade, yeah. But I do think this is probably a swan song in Chicago. Because, again, like, the Lions weren't running 12 personnel with Sam Laporta and Travis Kelce.
Right.
They were running it with Sam Laporta and Brock Wright.
Yeah.
And Brock Wright made pennies on the dollar. He's a nobody player. He's a one-package player. And that was it. You really want your $50 million tight end being used the way Brock Wright was in Detroit?
Here's the one thing that I will say, and I think it does speak to Cole Kmet sticking around on this team. If they had gone Tyler Warren, I'd be like, oh, you're moving on from Cole Kmet sure. June 1. Like, guaranteed.
What's the Burden pick that made me?
Luther Burden is one where it does. Now it seems like, okay, kind of what we talked about last year, right? Is the room a little too crowded here? Who's getting the targets? The one thing I'll say about it from the tight end position, though, is Colston Loveland, to me, it could have a Trey McBride type of rookie year where, or I guess more of a, I say Trey McBride. What Trey McBride did last year in his rookie year, right? Ton of yards, doesn't really find the end zone a lot.
Sure.
I think if you get into goal line situations, depending on who you get at that running back position, but a lot of questions on Roshan, I think Cole Kmet is a goal line tight end who could come out of this season with like 438 receiving yards and 8 touchdowns. Where it's just throw it to the tall dude that knows how to box out because he played basketball. I don't see that as much with Colson Loveland. I see him as the route runner.
I don't agree.
Who's, you think he's – I mean, his contested catch rate is not great. Now, granted, it's basically like 1990s three-pointers. There were only 3 of them, you know, kind of to choose from.
Well,
so he dropped a couple of them and then makes a big catch in this moment. They're not throwing the football nearly as much.
But if you watch it on tape, he – did play basketball he all did. Through high school. Yeah. He had a basketball background. He knows how to box out. He's a way better route runner than
100%. He's a better route runner
coming in.
Yeah,
he is a big body. He's a physical presence. Again, basketball background and the box out ability. And what I see on tape is bad throws that he was able to catch. The catch radius is there. Go up and get it balls in a field of defenders.
Yeah.
I kind of just feel like Colston Loveland could take Cole Kmet out of this offense.
Possibly. And I think the Luther Burden pick plays a ton into it. To me, I think the Luther Burden pick made me go a completely different direction with my biggest loser. My double doinker award goes to Olamide Zaccheaus. I showed up. I signed here. I thought I was the slot guy. All right, bet. I had a starting role here in Washington. Feeling good. All right, coming in. Ben, what do you want? But you drafted who? The number one slot receiver in college football. What's my job now?
Yeah.
I feel like if there is a clear cut, there were 2 guys that I said when that pick came in, you just kind of went, oh, this is way worse. It was Olamide Zaccheaus and Tyler Scott. And yeah. I think Zaccheaus to me is going to be one of those guys who now you're here for the depth. Now you're here for the competition aspect of it. You're going to push Luther Burden, who's probably going to end up taking the job because he's a second round pick. But you're coming off of your best season, and now basically your best bet, if basically Luther Burden doesn't suck, is to be the bench guy. That sucks.
Yeah, it's brutal. But that's life in the NFL. If you're a depth piece, if you're a rotational guy, that's life, man. It's fleeting. Your existence is on a knife edge. And if the draft falls a certain way, as we've seen, you're on the wrong end of the knife.
Yeah, listen, it was when I saw that come through, I was like, we just signed him. What is his role now? Like, you, he's got to be going through his brain and just going, I could have signed here. I could have signed here and been the starter. Now I'm the depth guy. Let's have a good camp and just make this team at this point. Favorite decision, acquisition, or firing, the one that makes you light a cigar and go, Dappers. So I call it the Ditka Seal of Approval Award here. What's your favorite decision of the offseason, Shay Norley?
I thought hiring Ben Johnson would be a cop-out.
It's what I put, though.
It's the easy opinion, and it's not – I'm not here to say that it's wrong. Like, if that's your favorite decision, you're right. It's just the obvious one, and it's not the opinion I really ever want to have. So I'm going with actually hiring Dennis Allen as my favorite decision. Like, firing Eberflus was an easy call here.
Yes. But
Hiring Dennis Allen's my one. You look at his history in New Orleans, especially as defensive coordinator. I believe he was there as the DC from 2015 to 2022.
Yep.
And Sean Payton left and left him in charge. Those defenses were consistently top 10, if not top five. He was excellent. And yes, they had great personnel, but even early in his tenure as head coach, they were still excellent defensively.
Yeah.
And some of the context around why things went wrong, I don't think Dennis Allen was a good head coach. In fact, I would say
he was a bad head coach.
He was a pretty bad head coach.
Yeah.
As a defensive play caller, I thought he was great. And I think the context of what happened in New Orleans, too, to be a bad head coach in a bad situation, Sean Payton dipped when Drew Brees dipped and left them holding a bag on Taysom Hill.
Yep.
Eating salary cap space. They sunk a cost in Derek Carr, who either stunk or couldn't get on the field. Defensively, Marshawn Lattimore got hurt, played 17 games over two seasons, a key piece on their defense, and they had to trade him last year to Washington. So things just weren't perfect. They didn't constitute like success happening. And I think Dennis Allen's got a bad rep right now from fans because of how bad things were in New Orleans. But there's a context around why it was that bad. And he also doesn't have those responsibilities anymore. Yep. Now he's just the head coach of the defense. And I think that's a good place to have him. Also, it proved this organization was willing to make serious moves. That is a multi-million dollar defensive coordinator. It's an extremely serious hire. It puts a guy who has done the job in the room with a guy who hasn't, Ben Johnson, a new head coach, has an assistant on this staff that is a former head coach in the league and can help him through some of the tougher parts of this. I just think it's an invaluable hire.
Yeah. I mean, listen, you're not wrong. To me, the Dennis Allen conversation is, it's one of those things of you have a guy in the building who's been in the position that Ben Johnson is now in, but made all of the mistakes. Right. He's had all the missteps. He's had all the, we swung big on this guy and missed out on it. Right. Like, to me, that part of Dennis Allen is invaluable because the DC part of it, listen, like my true hope, and I'm sure this is not what Dennis Allen is hoping, but like the hope is that you can have something here for a long time to come. And Dennis Allen now is viewed as just the defensive coordinator.
Yeah.
And he can be here for 10 years and we can talk about how great his defenses were for 10 seasons. And he becomes Vic Fangio
or Steve Spagnuolo,
right? Like all of these guys who are the elite defensive coordinators in the league, two head coaching jobs. You would believe that probably is where people are kind of going to have him for a while. Not to say he'll never get another look.
Well, he's also in his 60s. I mean, it's
when
you're at a certain age, like Josh McDaniels got multiple opportunities, but Josh McDaniels was young. And also, he's not getting a third.
He was so bad, though.
He was terrible.
He was so bad. It's impressive he got a second opportunity for me. I've always been like, wow, like it really is just, we got to try something. that was the shock. My biggest winner, I'll take the cheesy pick, right? It's Ben Johnson. And to me, the favorite decision, because you talk about the change. It starts with Ben Johnson. We knew how much Ben Johnson was going to cost, and that is why every Chicago Bears fan just about in the city was like, I would love Ben Johnson, but
right.
That but was because we didn't believe the Bears were ever going to pay the price it was going to cost to get Ben Johnson in the building. The same way you feel about Dennis Allen, I'm sure you feel about Ben Johnson too, is just the mindset of this team is completely different after going out and getting Ben Johnson. And it doesn't feel like it changed when we got to free agency. Doesn't feel like it changed when we got to the draft. Although There's a draft pick in there that does make this list, and it is tough. You know where I'm going. But it's the Bears are not the Bears of last season, where we started the season. I'm sick of having running back talk, but I would much rather have running back talk than have, so we're going to sign a center, right? Because that was all last season. Where it was like, no, there's no way we're going into this season where Ryan Bates is your best option, right? Like, we're in a completely different spot with the organization. So I love it from that standpoint. Let's look at the flip side of this. The Trestman Tragedy Award there, Shay. The most hated decision, acquisition, or firing of the offseason. That move that gave you flashbacks of yesteryear.
So it's tough because there's not really a move that I explicitly hate.
Right.
Like, nothing they did is something I'm like, that's terrible.
Yeah.
So I just went with something that left me scratching my head. And it's, I've kind of demanded defensive line help all season. They addressed it a little bit with Shamar Turner. It was 62nd pick in the draft. We'll see how that works. I mean, he was injured his final year at A&M. Jury's out there. But I wanted edge help, or I wanted a defensive tackle, premium position in the draft. And I thought there was an opportunity in the second round with Scorton and Donovan Ezeraku on the board for the Bears. They traded out of the 41st pick.
Yep.
They didn't address edge rusher, and obviously they were going running back, and it just felt like it feels so much that the mindset is different because they're spending big money on hiring staff. It feels like the mindset in the front office and the personnel department is very much the same, and it's all skill position guys. We need to address tight end, and then we need to address slot receiver. So by default, I think Luther Burden is the move I like the least, which is fascinating because he's one of the players I like the most. I love this guy. I think he's fantastic. 2 years ago at Mizzou, he was a machine. Yep. People thought he could win the Heisman in 2024. That didn't pan out. They had injuries at quarterback. Theo Weiss, Mizzou's outside receiver, really took off as a weapon. Kind of schemed Burden out coming from the slot position at times. And the quarterback problems, just they weren't able to get what they wanted to do going. And I like the player a lot. But when you talk about investing tight end and then slot receiver, and it leaves me wondering, where are targets for the tight end I paid $50 million to? Where are targets for the wide receiver I drafted 9th overall a year ago? Where are targets for the wide receiver I just gave a massive extension to a season ago? Why are we addressing this one position so highly while apparently ignoring an edge rusher opposite of Montez Sweat? That's when I love the player, but the process of doing it has left me scratching my head, and I can't square the circle.
I get that. I mean, listen, when the Luther Burden pick came in, I was confused. Now, I do love the Ozzie Trapillo selection later on in the draft. I think you got good value with the trade back scenario that you did do. Ozzie Trapillo, Shamar Turner, of course, you mentioned the injury there. The one thing that I'll say about the Luther Burden selection is it still feels like a pick to me that if Ben Johnson is this mad scientist, you make work. And is everybody happy? No. Right, there's going to be somebody who's going to be pissed they're not getting targets. We can pretend that there is or not. But I watched A.J. Brown be pissed all the way till winning a Super Bowl.
But
and it was because, well, we're giving the ball to Saquon Barkley a lot.
No, it sure the fuck wasn't because of that. I'm so tired of hearing that narrative. Like, A.J. Brown was pissed and they won a Super Bowl because they ran the ball so well. No, they won a Super Bowl because Patrick Mahomes couldn't get a fucking yard in the Super Bowl. Why? Zach Bond, Jalen Carter. Yeah. Like, their defensive line was loaded to bear. To the point that, like, Carolina's offering Milton Williams a bag in free agency.
Yeah.
That's why they won it. And I have no concerns that this offense will work. I believe it will. I think Caleb's very good. I like the weapons that you have. I love Burden as a player. I love Colston Loveland as a player. And you have maybe the best play caller in the sport. That's wonderful. Who is pressuring the quarterback? Because that's what won the Eagles the Super Bowl.
Yeah. No, but I agree with you on that, but I think my pushback would be on the way there. You know, and I agree with you, the trenches is where it's at. But looking at how the Eagles did on the offensive end, it does make it easier on both sides, right? The defense makes it easier on the offense. I would say the Eagles' offense last season made it just as easy on the defense. You're starting off this season, to me.
I think people forget how sluggish the Eagles' offense was for the first like 10, 11 weeks of the season. Didn't they go 12 weeks without scoring a point in the first quarter?
Yeah, but they scored a lot of points in 2, 3, and 4.
I mean,
I get what you're saying, but like to me, it's that's just kind of how their offense was. It was, look, we got Saquon back there. It's going to be a slower burn. It's going to be handing the football off. We're getting a yard and a half per carry on the offensive line before Saquon Barkley even touches the football. And then he gets to go be Saquon Barkley. I think that's what the Bears are looking to build here. Defensive line-wise, Dennis Allen's philosophy is just different from where ours is. When I talked to him when we were up there, he emphasized the importance of the interior of the defensive line being kind of his focus.
Yeah.
To me, that's when I saw Dio Odengbo, I was like, oh, you just want him to be out there on the edge, setting the edge. Your goal is to destroy people in the middle of this offense or defensive line.
Yeah.
And basically have Montez Sweat and Dio Odengbo reap the benefit of a quarterback running towards them. You don't care about them as much destroying the left tackle or right tackle and just getting to the quarterback off rip. I think the goal that Dennis Allen has for this defense is to continually explode the middle of the line, and whatever happens after that happens.
Better work. Like I don't think you make your life more difficult by getting a premium edge rusher. I don't. You know what I mean?
Nick Scorton fits. The one name you said is Nick Scorton. When I was up there talking to him as well, he said, you know, I don't like my defensive end small. Now, he did select Khalil Mack, who's 252, which is small for him. He was like, but ideal size for him is 280. Nick Scorton is I think he's 280 exactly. He really was the only guy in the draft at that.
Yeah, and it's I wanted that position. I feel like you can't hurt yourself getting that position.
Yeah.
Even if your idea is we want to pressure from the middle. Like the Eagles have elite pass rushers. They also have elite pressure from the middle of the defense.
100%. Jalen Carter.
And I just worry that it's too much water to carry for Jervon Dexter and Andrew Billings. One, Billings has to stay healthy. And two, Dexter had a nice season last year. He ranked 65th in pressures. Like you just that or 60th, maybe Grady Jarrett was 65th in pressures. There you go. Like it just the guys in the middle have to be more productive.
100%.
And maybe they will be, but I have a hard time selling myself on it based on what they've done that it's just going to explode going forward.
Yeah. Well, the goal is you look at the average last season, they gave up 21 points a game. Ben Johnson's goal is not to score 22. Ben Johnson's goal is to put up 38 a game. I mean, what Lions were 33 points per game last year. I think if you even get – Bears last year were about 19 points per game. If you can add 10 points per game to that, which is a lot.
But
you also went out and got Ben Johnson.
You need the defense to stay where it was and, even get better maybe.
How much at the end of that season, too, like the defense just going, oh, Flus is not smart.
I always just think, and I always just think, too, like people are talking about, well, the Bears are going to score 38 points a game. No, they're not.
Lions average 33.
33 is about the
couple of pop games.
33 is about the maximum that you're going to get. And some of those scores are going to be influenced by your defense.
Yeah.
So to me, it's just you look at the Lions, you look at the Bills, what killed them in the playoffs? Those were the two highest scoring offenses in the NFL.
Defense.
What killed them in the playoffs?
Yep, defense.
I've just been begging for help on the edge. And look, Montez Sweat's a good player. I wouldn't call him elite. He ranked 45th in pressures.
Yeah.
People keep, well, Montez Sweat might have a bounce back season. To what? He has never been an elite pass rusher. He's been good. He's never been elite. You don't have an elite edge rusher. That bothers me, especially when you once again go tight end, wide receiver. Like, it's just skill position marriage in the draft bothers me.
Yeah.
With what you lack on your defensive line.
Yeah, I agree. I think, listen, the edge is going to be a question mark of, you know, where you want to gamble. Dennis Allen wants to gamble on the interior. Now, granted, right, when you've got the interior fixed, I've watched Leonard Floyd turn into a 12.5 sack per game guy. You know what I mean? So it is kind of, I get the marriage to it, but I would rather have your Khalil Mack, who I thought Mike Green could have been, or your Nick Scorton coming off of the edge, who just wins, just always wins his matchup. So my Trestman Tragedy Award, I didn't hate really anything this offseason, but there's one that I just was like, okay, we're just doing stuff now. And maybe I'll be proven wrong. It's taking Ruben Hippolyte II in the fourth round.
I knew you were going.
Maybe I'll be proven wrong. It you wanted to address the linebacker position. This is not the draft to do that. I don't think there were really any elite linebackers taken. There were some glue guys, but there were guys on the
Jihad Campbell fan.
I like him.
You know he's going to be an All-Pro.
We'll see.
Because Howie drafted him.
Yeah. That's true.
That's the way it works, man.
That's true, actually. That's the way it works. He's probably going to be the one where we look back and go, oh, that he's amazing.
That's 30 teams are going to do that. 30 teams are going to go, damn, we passed on Jihad Campbell. And if he had gone to any of the other 30, it wouldn't have been that guy.
Yeah, he wouldn't have.
But the Eagles got him. He's an All-Pro.
It's just the linebacker position outside of that, though. Like, here's my thing. If you're going to get somebody, I get drafting for the RAS scores, drafting for the intangibles, what guys could have been. And thank God the Bears didn't do that in the first round with Shamar Turner. Shamar Stewart. But you got to get somebody that's good at something on the field besides fast. Because he's not even big.
Yeah.
He's 6'2", 230. For a linebacker, all right, you better be fast and you better be great in coverage. Oh, wait, he's bad in coverage. Yeah. Like, that's the only move this offseason where that was our Torrey Taylor. That was this year's Torrey Taylor.
Yeah, it's one of those where, and people are like, well, he would have been available in the seventh round. Are we sure about that? Like, I imagine because he ran a position best 40 time at his pro day, he would have gone off the board shortly after. I doubt the Bears reached anywhere close to as much as people are assuming they did.
Yeah.
But he was an unranked prospect, and it will be the same judgment as Torrey Taylor, where if anybody behind that selection is successful, that's a bad pick.
And guess what? One, you might have one on your team who, if we flip, I said this morning, if you flip the picks of Kyle Manungai and Ruben Hippolyte II, you had a great draft.
Yeah,
but if in the fourth round you got Kyle Manungai and you're sitting there going, wow, okay, best running back in the Big Ten, basically stacked the box versus Rutgers, fell that far because of Rutgers.
I won't stand for Caleb Johnson erasure or Travion Henderson erasure or Quinshon Judkins erasure.
Let me clarify it. Best numbers from the running back position.
Thank you.
I will clarify that.
Sorry.
Because Travion Henderson 100% had 100 less yards than he did with like 90 less carries. So I will agree with you on that.
Sorry.
If you're going Travion Henderson getting the full carries, he's probably up there with Ashton Gentry at the top of this draft.
But isn't that the perfect reason why draft grades are so fucking stupid?
Yeah.
Because you go, well, if I get Kyle Manungai in the fourth round and Hippolyte in the seventh, I feel better about it. You got both players. Does it really matter? Like, really?
It's Hippolyte feels like a seventh round pick.
Yeah, that's fine.
That's the point I'm making, right? Where you sit there and yes, you got both players, but it strongly feels one of those players is a candidate not to make a team, and it's not the seventh round pick.
Yeah, I get that. We'll see how it plays out, yeah, and then we'll grade it based on that. Your first round pick could be like Colston Loveland, I think is really good. I imagine will be a very good NFL player. There's a world where he doesn't have a job in 3 years. And if that happens, then you simply got the pick wrong. It doesn't matter if it was pick 10 or pick 110. So it just, we don't operate with the intel that they operate with. And if they had intel that the team behind you is going to take Ruben Hippolyte, well, then you take Ruben Hippolyte where you took him. And we can all go, he wasn't ranked on the mock drafts. Yeah, Mel Kiper also thought that Shedeur Sanders was going to go second. So maybe the mock drafts don't know as much.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I don't care about the mock drafts. I care about the fact that we drafted a linebacker that's bad in coverage.
That's fine. I agree. Yeah.
The mock drafts are what they are, right? Like everybody, that's my favorite part of the draft day. Just people losing their minds that people are going opposite of their mock drafts. Meanwhile, I think the most accurate mock drafter is like I don't even know what the paper's name is, but he hits it like an 85% rate.
That's absurd.
On the last 5 years in the mocks. It is what it is. That's one where we probably won't be caring about it if the Bears are winning.
I think we should grade big boards, not mock drafts, because predicting positions is terrible. Give me 3 years down the road what your big board looks like against pro production, and then you can tell me about how you are at evaluating players.
I like that. That's actually solid. That will cost a lot of jobs, though. I'm not going to lie to you. We can't do that shit. That costs a lot of jobs.
What Kuiper did, I laugh because people are like, he should be fired because he's freaking out about Shedeur Sanders.
He's picking the players.
Do you know what he did? He had everybody talking about him. He was wildly entertaining.
Yes.
That is his job.
Yes.
His job is not to be right about the draft. His job is to entertain you while you watch it.
Yeah, that is notice there's no insider after Kuiper. Analysts get to be entertaining. Our sneaky upside move, or as I called it, the peanut punch pick of the offseason. Who was your sneaky upside move for the Chicago Bears?
Hiring Antoine Randall-El away from the Detroit Lions. Mm. You got the wide receiver coach who took Amon-Ra St. Brown from fifth round pick to top five receiver in the National Football League. And it's not just taking fifth round Amon-Ra St. Brown to top five. It's also rescuing Jameson Williams' career. I think people forget after his rookie season, there were questions about if he could even be an NFL receiver. Yeah. He has become a very clear starting NFL receiver. Goofball? Sure.
Yeah.
Prone to very bad decisions? Sure. But very good player. And it's also, Josh Reynolds got pulled off the scrap heap and was instrumental for them two seasons ago in their offense. Last year, wide receiver was viewed as a position of weakness for the Lions after Amon-Ra and J-Mo. Who was it that got pulled off the scrap heap? Tim Patrick. Tim Patrick became wildly successful in Detroit.
Yeah.
You got the guy who coached all of these players. And getting Antoine Randall-El in a room with DJ Moore and with Rome, and Rome is a must hit. If he's not good, that's going to be problems.
Yep.
You got him with Luther Burden. He might be able to work a little bit with Colston Loveland and with Cole Kmet in the pass-catching game. I think that's another one that I looked at as just being an invaluable hire.
I think Colston Loveland spends a lot more time with him.
I agree.
He's basically your third wide receiver on this team.
And again, it's why the Luther Burden thing was so confusing, because Colston Loveland at Michigan played 47% of his snaps from the slot.
Yeah.
His best skill is route running. And then you took a player who plays that position. So the whole thing just, it leaves me scratching my head, but I imagine the plan is to play Loveland more in line and utilize the route running from an inline tight end spot. The chip blocking's got to get better. The run blocking's got to get better. But that's true for both tight ends on this team.
Yeah, and as I was going to say, like, there's no great blocking at the tight end position right now. But the hope is, and I know that it's certain plays you got to utilize it. My hope is that the offensive lineman block on this team, that'd be fun.
Yeah, that'd be great.
That'd be really nice if we could get that to happen. My sneaky upside move, and I love the Randall-El pick, and I go this direction kind of for the same reason, is Eric Bieniemy. Because you've got Eric Bieniemy in here as basically just a running backs coach, which he knows the position. He's played the position. He's played it really freaking well. He's coached the position really freaking well. Adrian Peterson is on that list of guys that he coached and got in order. And AP talks about how he hated this guy, but how he's an instrumental reason why he becomes Adrian Peterson. But not only do you have him here as a running backs coach, this staff reminds me so much of that Green Bay staff with Mike Holmgren, where you've got Andy Reid. You've got John Gruden on that staff, where somebody's going to see something and go, oh, I've got this play for it. Ben, we need to run this. Oh, Antoine Randall-El is going to be a part of that as well. Oh, Ben, if we put this in play, this is going to work. Like, there's so many pieces here. And I think Eric Bieniemy, having been an offensive coordinator already in the league, probably comes at that a little bit more. You basically have a team that has three offensive coordinators on it, because they praise Declan Doyle for essentially the same reason, where not only is he a great guy in the room, but also the play designs that he's coming up with are phenomenal. Like, you have that guy on your offensive staff who's already been a part of play designs with Andy Reid in these big rooms, has been an OC on his own, designed some solid plays in Washington, didn't always come across the greatest, right? Didn't always have the greatest execution. I think a lot of interesting moves at quarterback while he was the OC. But to me, that's the move that I think rounds out this offensive staff perfectly.
Yeah, I think that, and I think also a little underrated is getting former players on this staff.
Yes.
And it's something that people laughed at. I think the Lions did it a couple years ago. It was Deuce Staley and Ben Johnson, and I think every assistant coach on their team was a former player, and Dan Campbell, obviously a former player. Every coach on the staff was a former player. People kind of laughed at it, and then it worked. And the Bears last year, I think maybe had zero former players outside of Matt Eberflus. It wasn't many. And now you've gone out. And even Eberflus, I don't think, did he play in the NFL or was it just in college? No,
he didn't play in the NFL, just in college. He played for Saban. Is Washington a player? Yeah, not many.
But it's...
Yeah, you're right, not many.
You've come out and gotten former players and put them on the staff, and I think that's also a valuable resource to lean on when it comes to pointing out things you're seeing in the game and what you can do differently, what wrinkles you can add, what adjustments you can make.
Yeah, I think this is going to be... To me, Ben Johnson is not a Coach of the Year candidate just because of Ben Johnson.
No, it's people he has around him.
So many people around him. Like, there's so many people that should be able to help him navigate through this rookie year. Not seamlessly, because there's going to be some move that he makes that's going to be ballsy. And I don't even know if we can call those misses. He comes from working with Dan Campbell, who's like, yeah, go for it on two versus Dallas. We should have gotten the play. Technically, we did score, and the ref called a phantom call, and then we went with our gut again, and it didn't work.
Yeah.
Like, there's going to be some of those that people are saying, that's where a rookie head coach needs to improve. No, that's just who Ben Johnson's going to be.
What he is. Yeah, it's, and I've always laughed. Like, people here even will make fun of Dan Campbell for the decisions he makes. Dan Gamble.
Yeah.
And he costs them wins. But I always point out, if it works 80% of the time, you can talk about the 20% that cost you, but you're only in position to make those decisions because of the 80% that worked.
Yep.
You're only in an NFC title game because of the success that you've had making those same decisions. And then people, well, he should have kicked the field goal. He shouldn't have gone for it on fourth down in San Francisco. Well, I'm sorry. The play was perfect. Josh Reynolds dropped the ball.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The process works. It's just occasionally you won't have the success. But you'll never be in position to make those decisions if you're not making them the whole time. And I think there will be consistency at least.
That's the part I try to judge, you know, coaches off of, is are you actually putting your players in the position to make successful plays?
Right.
And did they F it up? Right. Like I remember, was it Getsy? Luke Getsy? Yeah, it had to be Luke Getsy. The play call that he had versus Detroit for Justin Fields to win the game, perfect play call. You can't design it up perfectly. Justin Fields threw a perfect football. Tyler Scott dropped the ball.
Yeah.
Now, maybe you don't want to have that play go to Tyler Scott. That may be where you say the flaw in the play is. But he was wide open. And no one expected it to go to him. Got to catch the football. Those are the moments for me where it's like, that's a good play call. You messed it up. With Dan Campbell and Ben Johnson, I think we see a lot of that in Detroit's playoff runs where it's like, yeah, there's moments they gamble, but the ball also hit the receiver in both hands and the face and the chest, and then it hit the ground.
Yeah.
That's I'm willing to live with that. Speaking of the head coach coming in here and some of the people who are under pressure on this team, I've got the Halas Hot Seat Award. Who's walking in day one, Shay Norling, with the culmination of the offseason? Who has the most pressure on them?
I don't think there's any answer other than Caleb Williams. Look, last year, and I'm not even going to say that the excuses were wrong, but they were excuses. You get sacked 68 times. Well, your offensive line couldn't block for you. The offense doesn't produce enough. Well, your play caller was terrible and your head coach was an idiot. And we had to fire your play caller, and then we had to fire your head coach. And then you had Thomas Brown. Incomplete passes where he missed a receiver down the field. Well, they miscommunicated on the route, DJ ran the wrong route, or Rome ran the wrong route. Why didn't he throw the ball to Cole Kmet? Well, Cole Kmet's been schemed out of the – the point I'm making, I didn't play the excuse game last year. Caleb took too many sacks, period. That's the game I played. It's the game I will play again. There are no excuses for the quarterback. The offensive line is retooled. You have DJ Moore under a contract extension. You have a top-10 pick at wide receiver. You have a top-10 pick at tight end. You have Luther Burden at slot receiver. Your running game should be rejuvenated by your offensive line. If you take 50 sacks, that's on you, brother.
Yeah.
If you're missing throws, that's on you. If you don't have good deep ball accuracy like you didn't last year or at USC, that's on you. If you keep running backwards the second there's pressure, that's on you. Just because you got the offensive line improved doesn't mean every play is going to be perfect. Yep. I need you to climb the pocket. I need you to be a little more accurate. I need you to take a profit sometimes instead of going for the home run. I need you to take fewer sacks. Sack avoidance has to get better. All of it has to get better. And I think it will. But if it doesn't, the conversation will heat up to what it was going into Justin Fields year three.
Yeah.
And he is by far under the most pressure this season to me.
I would agree with you. The other name I had on the list was Ryan Poles. I had some co-pressure on there.
That's fair.
Just because I think, like, if this doesn't work for Ryan Poles, I mean, it's
might be tough. Your job.
It might be your job. And I think he's made all the right decisions. I do. I think getting Ben Johnson is the right move. I think that getting Joe Tooney is absolutely the right move. I think that going out and getting Grady Jarrett, when what everybody was screaming for was accountability, is the right move, because Grady Jarrett's going to walk in and be like, you know, like, I can – like, if you don't do your job, that's my job. And, like, then now me and you got a problem. You don't want that problem with Grady Jarrett. But if it doesn't work, it's kind of a timing thing.
Yeah.
Thank you for building this team for us. We appreciate you playing the work version of our game. We'll take it from here. I can see that happening 100%. Where you bring in the guy that maybe Ben Johnson wanted all along, if it isn't Ryan Poles. We remember all that being a conversation. Now it didn't materialize, but yeah, you're doing it differently. But at that point, Ben Johnson's basically in charge.
But this is the point that I'm making. Like, these two things are going to always be in tandem. Yep. Ryan Poles and Caleb Williams.
It's going to be a marriage, yep.
Because you can make all the excuses. Caleb Williams, we couldn't get you protected. We got you three new offensive linemen.
Yeah.
Five, really, but four with Ozzie Trapillo being included. We rebuilt your offensive line. Your play caller was terrible. We went out and got you the best one. Wide receivers didn't catch the ball enough. Well, we went out and got you another one to add to the top 10 pick we got you a year ago.
And technically two.
Cole Kmet. I couldn't find Cole Kmet on the field. Okay, here's a shiny new tight end.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's,
you've given him everything.
Ryan Poles is making good decisions in terms of surrounding Caleb Williams with talent. And now if it doesn't work, it's on Caleb.
Yeah.
I have no illusions about that. That's why I said the pressure is on him. But if it doesn't work, then the ultimate decision that will matter is that Ryan Poles selected Caleb Williams.
Yeah.
So they are, even more than people think Ryan Poles and Ben Johnson are married. No, he's married to the quarterback that, yep, he chose number one overall. If that doesn't work, that is what will decide Ryan Poles' fate in this league.
Especially in the bubble of the offensive rookie of the year last year went number two.
Yep.
And they did everything you didn't do.
And by the way, if you look at the rate stats and the sack rate and all that fun stuff, the guy who went number three was a little better with a whole lot worse. So it just... This has to look right this year at the quarterback position.
I told you coming into it when they hired Vrabel, I was like, hey, they might build this team in one offseason, bro. Like,
dude, and
as a Patriots fan, I think you're in for a much more fun season than you think you're in for.
If you want to do like the around the NFL kind of thing too, like and this is bias aside, Patriots have one of the three best off seasons in the sport right now.
Yeah.
One of the two or three best. And again, we know how that goes in Chicago. You can't hang banners for winning off seasons, but drafting Will Campbell, getting Stephon Diggs, supplying Drake May with talent. It is scary,
but I get it. Yeah.
You get a veteran receiver, you pair him with your quarterback.
Yeah.
No, it feels like, you know, Travion Henderson's a good pick, especially with a retooled offensive line. It feels like they're a team that is really starting to cook with gas, and they had a ton of assets and a ton of money. They've done the right things with it. We feel like the Bears are in that spot, but it's going to hinge on Caleb showing us a lot more needed a year ago.
Yeah. And listen, the one thing I will say is that the accuracy rates for Caleb Williams go through the roof when you see him actually have time to throw the football, time to plant and stuff like that. I think there was a lot with the play caller last year that does cause confusion, especially the stuff we find out at the end of the season where basically – I don't know if this is true or not, but they just stopped kind of watching tape together by the end.
Yep.
Well,
and Ben Johnson's also not going to ask Caleb to lead the league in deep ball attempts.
Yeah. Yeah. There is that with a terrible offensive line there,
which is another thing I always laugh at because Caleb's bad at deep ball accuracy. It's true. He wasn't good throwing deep balls at USC. That's a fact. That's not me being mean. I'm giving you a fact.
Yeah.
He wasn't good at it. He wasn't good at it last year. But the reality is, if you're looking for deep ball efficiency, nobody is good at it. It's incredibly hard to complete deep ball passes in the NFL.
Yeah.
And when you ask a guy to throw a billion of them, the efficiency is going to be bad because deep ball efficiency is bad.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, usually you see, I think it is funny when we look at that and it's just like, just with Caleb Williams, this guy, he can't hit anybody deep. And is it pause? That's crazy. And
that was wild.
That was nuts.
No,
that
it's actually insane. It's more wild that you said pause because I wasn't in the gutter at all on it.
Yeah, I had to. That was going to be out there. But then you look at like when these other quarterbacks are hitting the deep ball, it's once a game, or twice a game, maybe.
Yeah, like if
Caleb Williams is putting up six a game down the field. You know what I mean? Like,
if you lead the league in deep ball completion percentage, which is passes over 20 plus yards, you're probably completing 50-ish percent of them.
Yes.
Nobody is elite. Nobody's throwing 70% completion rates on deep balls. Yeah. It's not real.
What I will say is this, though. Caleb Williams does have to be a lot better. And if he was a lot better at it, i.e. what you got with Joe Burrow, who doesn't have an offensive line, but Joe Burrow don't miss. If Jamar Chase is down there, Joe Burrow's hitting Jamar Chase. That, I think, is where last season the Bears overestimated, where this season, listen, he's going to be better at the deep ball. He's going to be better at the intermediate pass. He's going to be better in the slot because there's going to be time to go set hut 1-2, look at the field, throw. That is the hope with all that you've done on the offensive line.
And he's actually pretty good throwing over the middle of the field.
Yes.
I think the short and intermediate stuff's pretty good.
Ridiculously good throwing over the middle of the field last year.
It's just the deep ball misses, especially to the sideline, weren't close.
Yeah. I think I'll say this, and we can finish out on this. To me, what Caleb Williams is at this year that's going to be different from last year, and Ryan Pohl said it when he was on with Cap and Jay Hood, is the Bears are not going to be reactive. And I think that the Bears last season were reactive. They weren't the aggressor. Caleb Williams threw that pick to Cole Kmet in Houston, and they never attempted that pass again until Matt Eberflus was fired. The week he was fired, Caleb Williams throws that pass to Rome Odunze. And it's like, I learned from don't underthrow the ball on that. Yeah. Give it a one-on-one chance. Rome Odunze, 2 feet in, makes an amazing catch.
Even the tip ball interception in Indy, where it was off Rome's hands and double coverage, they stopped doing
that. You never attempted that pass again for that whole run of, which is cool, right? The most passes without an interception or whatever it was. It's cool, but then you break it down and it's like, but there weren't a lot of 50-50 balls.
Well, that's the thing. People cite the interception rate, which is fantastic.
It's great.
I don't want my quarterback turning the ball over. He only threw 6 interceptions. That's wonderful. He also, they coached any and all risk out of his game.
Yeah.
And risk is where he shined a lot, making the impossible
second
throw.
Half of the, or I shouldn't even say second half, what, last 6 games Thomas Brown got, I think? Thomas Brown was like, let it rip. We're losing.
So,
let it rip. Take your chances.
And I think Ben Johnson will do more of that. Yeah. Cut it loose and trust that you can make these throws. And, like you've talked about the 200 thing that Matt Eberflus talked
for
about.
For Justin. Oh, my God.
The that two was, touchdowns, no turnovers.
Got it every game. He got it every single game. But then in the second half, you're up 31 to 13. And you just said, okay, we're not throwing any more passes.
But, like... The way Andrew Luck was coached versus the way Caleb Williams was coached, where Andrew Luck in Indy, and I use him because he was another number one pick, a generational prospect, they said, throw the ball, man. We'll live with 20 interceptions if you get us 40 touchdowns. Yeah. We're good to go. You have to be able to be willing to put the ball at risk at times. There has to be right times to do it. And they completely coached that out of him.
Yeah.
And I need him to be back to, like, I trust my arm. I can fire this into a little window.
Yeah.
I can get this to my guy. I can ask my receiver to go make a play instead of being fearful that the ball might get picked off.
And I think what you saw was when they finally started letting Caleb do that at the end of the season, when Thomas Brown started letting him do a little bit more of that, Caleb Williams was more willing to stand in there and take those sacks.
Yeah.
Because he's like, I can get this ball out while getting hit and get it in there to a window to DJ Moore that nobody should be able to hit. And you saw him be more confident in his game. You're going to get more out of Caleb Williams in general just with Ben Johnson. But I think letting Caleb be aggressive and not being like, well, we're just going to finish this game out by defense and running the football. Well, you can't run the ball, so that's a problem. And also, you're bad in rush and cover.
Yep.
So we can't stop anybody either.
It's just reminding your quarterback instead of like only throw to the open guy, only throw when there's – nobody's open in the NFL. Open in the NFL is you have a yard.
Cole Kmet was kind of open.
Yeah, at times.
Cole Kmet was a lot open. Like last year, I left last season, and especially with the Colson Loveland pick going, is there beef there? But you know what I'm saying. You didn't want to throw it there for some reason.
And that's part of why I thought he was schemed out of the offense, yeah. because he's open, but he's clearly not involved in the play. Yeah. That's a different thing.
Yeah.
When you're the guy in the play, you're almost never open. You're open by a yard, a yard and a half, and it's the smallest window, and it closes in a second. But he has to feel like he can make those throws, and the coaching staff trusts him to attempt them rather than eliminate them from your game because we're scared you're going to turn it over. No, I don't do any of that anymore.
Yeah, yeah. Let's be aggressive. I love it. Those are the offseason awards. Let us know your names that you would put with all of the awards. I think that this has been an offseason where we can hang the offseason banner. The Bears should be excited about what's coming into this season. And the part that makes me feel most excited is I think Ben Johnson's a lunatic coming into training camp. So we'll see kind of how this training camp goes. I think players are going to be in for a wild surprise when Ben Johnson walks out there and be like, why didn't you hit him? What'd you say? We can hit people? This is football? For Shay Norling, ladies and gentlemen, it's your boy Pat the Designer back at it again. Y'all stay safe out there in Chicago. Bear down, one love. Peace.